Welcome everybody back to the Polish Guy Podcast, and I gotta say, last couple of weeks have been very exciting in the sports world. One of these issues is still gonna sort itself out for, oh, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, so I suppose we can still talk about it now. We're gonna talk about Jim Joyce, we're gonna talk about the imperfect game by Armando Galarraga, and get my thoughts on baseball replay. We've actually spoken about this before on the podcast, but I'll rehash it again. We talked about this on a ball, I believe it was hit by Joe Mauer down the line at Yankee Stadium. That was a terrible call that cost the Twins in the playoffs last year. Hack and I were on. We discussed what I thought about baseball replay and how easy this is to fix and how stupid some of the arguments are that are against baseball replay. We'll get to that in a minute, but first, the most interesting thing going on other than the World Cup is this college football realignment. You know, I get friends calling me out of the blue, and more than one, people coming up to me, Polish guy, what do you think? What do you think about college realignment? What is this all going to mean? Why is this happening? Well, quite simply, this is happening because of money. Just like how everything else happens with college football and sports, the singular rule I've been trying to tell people on the podcast for a long time is that if you find no easy reason for something, it's definitely money. And even if you find an easy reason, it's still money after that. So it's very important to always keep in mind here. Now, why is the Big 12 disintegrating before our eyes? Well, 3 years ago, when the Big Ten Network was trying to start itself up, the Big 12 had their had a big meeting. They had to sign their contracts for the allegiance to the Big 12. They discussed getting their own network, like the Big Ten Network. Well, it was the first few months, days, weeks of the Big Ten Network at the time of that meeting. The Big Ten Network was having trouble getting on the air, essentially, getting the right people. Of course, the cable contracts were involved there. It looked like it might not be the greatest endeavor. Well, per team, per year, the Big Ten Network Big Ten teams make on average roughly around $7 or $8 million more each season than the Big 12 because the Big 12 chose to not have its own network. So, although at the time it might have seemed like a good idea, now it's obviously a short-sighted idea. And there's only one thing fueling this, and it's money. All these teams that are in the Big 12 can go right now and make more money, guaranteed. And when you have snipping back and forth, you have ultimatums, because Texas, you know, basically runs the conference. They have the large TV markets, Texas A&M. You know, it's not the same for Nebraska. You know, tradition has nothing to do with this at all. None of these guys care about tradition. They care about the pockets of the university, which keeps the universities healthy. But yes, it's going to anger purists. It's going to anger people who love the history of the game, who love rivalries. But the Big 12 is essentially dead. And it's essentially dead because Texas says it's dead. Texas gets the big invitation from the Pac-10. They give ultimatums out to Missouri. Other teams don't know where they're going to end up, so they start looking other places. And all the whole time, underlying this would be they're going to make more money if they leave. So, what's going to happen? Well, how does this look like it's going to shake out? Look, anyone's guess is as good as mine, but it does seem that what we're pushing here, what we're going to be hurtling towards, is you're going to have 4 or 5 super conferences. You're going to have 64 to 80 teams encompassed in all 4 of those conferences, probably the SEC, the Pac-10, the Big Ten, and then some sort of other conglomerate, maybe the ACC and Big East, matched together. No one knows exactly how the dominoes will fall. Another question is, if Nebraska is jumping quickly to the Big Ten, Kansas, a team out there, basically, a free agent, didn't like what Texas was doing. They have an opportunity to jump, possibly. Why aren't they jumping immediately? Well, they haven't gotten an invitation from anybody yet. Now, the Big Ten, it would be easy for the Big Ten to do this, but Delaney, who runs the Big Ten, in my opinion, has a massive ego. This guy loves showing, he's one of those guys that I bet he has a huge, you know, if he had a stereotype of guy, he has a big, huge chain, he loves showing it around and stuff like that. Big gold chain in meetings. Probably doesn't really do that, but his ego is big enough that he could do that. Now, my feeling is that Nebraska is a safe pick for the Big Ten. Someone like Rutgers is a safe pick for the Big Ten. Someone like Notre Dame now is a safe pick for the Big Ten. Why? Because all the established Big Ten teams are currently better than them in most of the major sports. Exception would be hockey at Notre Dame. You could argue how good Notre Dame basketball is. Nebraska is average in most levels anymore, except for getting to the championship game, Big 12 championship game last year. But the Big 12 has always been a lopsided conference. You know, you have Texas, Texas A&M, Oklahoma on one side, and then you got Nebraska, Kansas, all them on the other, Kansas State on the other side. But the reason I think the Big 10 isn't immediately getting Kansas is because I think Delaney's ego is so big that he doesn't want to invite a team that's going to instantly dominate any of the big-time sports, which would be college football or college basketball. Kansas would do that. Immediately, Kansas would become the class of the Big Ten in basketball, and I don't think Delaney is going to let his ego allow that. So it's very interesting. But going back to the super conferences, what does this all mean? Well, not much really can happen. We can have all this jumping. We can actually build these super conferences by 2012, 2013. You know, all these defections right now are not effective until 2011. But what you could get is basically super conferences. Every conference has two divisions. And then there's a championship game for every conference. And you get the feeling of more of a true playoff system is developing itself here. So, ultimately, that's healthy for college football. Ultimately, that's going to make more money. Ultimately, I hope it's the death of the BCS. You can use the BCS for some sort of rankings, because you're going to have some sort of at-large bid, too. But you maybe, if you have five or six super conferences, you know, you take all the championship winners, you pick one or two at-large bids, you have an 8-team playoff system, you use the biggest name bowls that still exist for that playoff system. Sounds very similar to what we were talking about, well, since the inception of this podcast. We've been talking about this for a while. This is not something that should be new to anybody. So I really hope that that's what it's hurtling towards, but it's a fun time, and it's going to be very interesting how this all shakes out. Now with Nebraska gone, Boise State gone from their conference, and Missouri gone. Colorado gone. It's going to be very interesting how this plays out, and it's going to be a lot of fun until we get there. You know, there's some easy ones here. Maybe the Big East and ACC die off a little bit, or what's left remains. You know, Florida State and Miami can easily get snapped up by the SEC. That'll make them 14. Then they got to look for just a couple of more to get 16 teams. 14's enough, though. That's a super conference. You know, so it's going to be a fun time. Now, the part I was going to lead off with until all this started happening 2 days ago, and I tell you what, it's fascinating to follow the money and follow the things of how all these conferences have really developed over time. It's very interesting stuff for me because, thankfully, I'm a dork. That's why I'm doing this. But it's time to get to baseball and baseball replay. Two major stories in baseball would be, everyone knows this story by now. Yes, it happened about 2 weeks ago. Thought about doing a podcast in between, but now so much stuff has come up, I felt that we can just put this all in one. Plus, the ideas may have been thrown out, but some of the things you might not have, there's definitely things here that you haven't heard, and probably haven't heard anybody else write about. Very simply, baseball has grown to be archaic in many ways that it thinks. And, you know, this goes back to cherishing numbers that shouldn't be compared anyway. The thing, my biggest gripe with people in baseball, not understanding you can only compare eras because things have changed so much, with the size of the people, the complexion of the ball, the complexion of the bat, the size of the parks, the general environment of the game, the money involved in the game. So many things have changed. You can't compare these things the way it was. But before I go on that tangent again, baseball needs replay. Just simply looking at this from a business standpoint, why has football overtaken baseball? Well, one, football and TV technology are a perfect match for each other. That's a major, major reason. Baseball will never overcome that. But what you can do is make sure the you will survive by increasing the quality of your product. Very simple. You know, innovation, moving with the times. Baseball and Bud Selig don't seem that they want to do that. First, Bud Selig, in my opinion, did the right thing by not changing the game. I do agree that he can't go back and award a perfect game, even though the kid did throw the first 28 out perfect game I've ever seen in my life. I don't understand how Jim Joyce can make that call in that situation. You gotta give the defense the benefit of the doubt. It's the final play of the game. That part will never be understood to me. You know, in the interviews, Jim Joyce said that he was in position. But they point out on baseball, not baseball tonight, on the MLB Network, how out of position that he actually was from a similar play early in the game. So he did not have the proper angle. He probably really believes that he felt he had the proper angle, but he didn't. He had the proper angle on a similar play earlier in the game, and he got the call right. This time, he got the call wrong. Now, back to baseball and Bud Selig and his problems. Bud Selig said he wasn't going to change the call. I agree with that. I don't like opening that can of worms. There's too many what ifs there. There's too many timing issues with the game. Timing issues with that really could open up things. That's something that baseball doesn't need more problems. We're trying to solve problems here. But what Bud Selig said later is that he was going to review replay, and now he's saying that he might not expand replay at all. So, good old Bud Selig, you know, he waits a week after, and now he's basically saying he's probably not going to change a thing. As usual, baseball is left in the dust by sports that are willing to be technologically innovative and use things that are available. Baseball couldn't have replay in 1920 because we didn't have the technology. Now we have the technology, and the idea, is it the ultimate goal? Is it what everyone wants? People talk about sports being fair. Well, baseball's never been a fair sport. Cheating's always been a part of baseball. Well, I guess they don't want to change that perception either, and they don't want to change anything. This is the silliest thing I've ever heard in my life. Here you go, bud. I'm going to give you some of the reasons that you've given. I'm going to give reasons why these are stupid reasons to ignore replay. But first, I'm going to give you the simple solution to replay. One of the first things that people like to talk about when they talk about replay, well, the umpires are going to hate it. Well, how many umpires are going to hate replay if you create 15 umpiring positions? How will we do that? Very simple. There's replay booths in every single stadium already. You can take a fifth umpire, hire them for each game, and then he sits in a booth and he literally watches the game. That umpire in that booth has a buzzer. That buzzer goes to the crew chief on the field. Now there's only three things he's allowed to review. He's not allowed to review balls and strikes. He's allowed to do safe out, fair foul, home run, not home run. Now, all he does is that if there's a call that's wrong, he buzzes the crew chief. The crew chief says, "Up, I got buzzed. That guy is now safe instead of out." That is it. It will solve all the problems that we talk about. All those close plays. And you don't need to have a 5-minute committee. You don't need 3 guys to go in a booth. We have one individual just watching a game. You know what this saves? Well, first of all, let's start going down the list here. People are scared about ridding the game of the human element. Well, I'm pretty sure that if the guys are still making calls on the field, that means there's a human element. There's humans there. If we don't do it with balls and strikes, which I'm fine, I would hate that. That I don't want that in my sport. I do like a little bit of the gray area that balls and strikes do. It's a fun part of the game, in my opinion. So, you still have the human element for all balls and strikes. You still have the human element because they're still going to make 99% of the calls. These guys are amazingly accurate. Unfortunately, now we have a guy just caught with his pants down in the public on something that was incredibly inaccurate. But most of the time, umpires are incredible in how many they get right. And Jim Joyce is one of those guys that normally gets it right all the time. By all respects, an excellent umpire. No normal complaints about... This guy's not Joe West, all right? This is Jim Joyce. He's a good umpire. So you still have the human element. Now, what about preserving the history of the game? Well, this is just total crap. You know, these are the same people that are holding on to something they don't need to hold on to, but they don't realize that if you fix this now, you will create more history because you will get some of these things right. You now have a perfect game robbed of you because you didn't use technology. So all these people now, they're robbing themselves of being able to look back and talk about the history of something that did occur, but it didn't really occur. So don't give me this history crap. You're not fooling with history. You're making more history. Now, again, football has changed most over the last years. Baseball is a pastoral game. Baseball is about being out in a field with friends. Don't give me that crap. If you can use the technology in the game, everything else is technologically advanced. The bats, the helmets, the pants. Everything is more advanced than it was 25 years ago, except the obvious things like fixing the game. Now, baseball is a problem. It's as a time issue, right? Baseball is a time issue. Well, if you have a guy buzzing a guy on the field, now what are the most calls that are always argued? A manager comes out, argues for 5 or 6 minutes, you know, takes the time, usually gets thrown out of the game, but you know, there's always the storm and then the calm, and it always takes 5 or 6 minutes to kick a guy out for arguing a ball. You know, you're still going to get umpires coming out and getting kicked out for arguing balls and strikes. That's going to happen. Those are usually quick, though, because umpires know that they're not going to do that. They don't let people get away with that. They kick those guys out really quickly. But all these safe and out calls and all these other things that they talk about, manager's out there 5 or 6 minutes, even if he's thrown out of the game. Well, if you have a buzzer that's indisputable, and by the way, all of us at home see what's indisputable, you're going to save baseball. I don't know, what do you have, 2 arguments a game? 1, 2 arguments a game? That's 6 to 12 minutes that you just saved. When baseball is a time issue that everyone can't stand, the games take too long, well, you've just removed 3/4 of the arguing that happens in every game by having the technology. But no, you don't want to look at that, bud. No, that makes too much sense. Now, you know, the other reason, you know, I agree that Bud couldn't go back on this is that I really, you know, at that point, adrenaline's gone. That's a hollow victory for the kid. The kid knows in his heart, his whole life, he's going to have a tape of that game. He's going to be able to tell his kids, "I threw this perfect game." He's going to be more remembered than Dallas Braden. he's going to be possibly more remembered than Roy Halladay, but Roy Halladay, you know, is such a big name now. Look, Jim Joyce and Armando Galarraga handled this with class and as usual, but Selig handled it with stupidity, archaic thoughts, and just please go away, bud. Please go away. Fix our All-Star game. You'll hear that rant in a couple of months. I'll rehash that one from last year. Worst thing he ever did is demean the All-Star game. It used to be such a great thing. But the other thing is, if we had instant replay, if we had a guy in the booth buzzing guys, history would have been created. A poor guy who's a good guy, his family would have been spared of all the crap that they've had to go through since he is a goat. But no, let's just keep it the way it is. You're right, bud. You know what? This is fine. Let's eventually become the fourth most popular sport in America behind, or maybe fifth, because people are actually excited about the World Cup a little bit now. Not as much as ESPN would like you to believe, but people are legitimately excited. I'm going out to see USA England today. It's going to be a good time. And because we are starting to care a little bit about that, I'll just give a quick... I think Spain's going to beat Brazil in the final. I'm not doing anything fancy. I don't even know enough about soccer to really go on a limb and say, hey, I think it's going to be Uruguay. Nah. I'm going to go Spain over Brazil because I think Brazil will get a little too cocky and Spain will be able to take advantage of it. And unfortunately, folks, I do not think we beat England today. I think the United States will win their other two games in their group. They'll go to the round of 16, lose to some powerhouse, and we'll have a respectable World Cup. I think we'll go 2-1 in pool play. I think we're going to lose today just 1-0. I think they'll be a little tight, and England will break through at some point, and that'll be that. So there you go. That's my minute and a half on World Cup. I think that's the true love of the game that Americans still have. So roughly 1.5 minutes for an hour podcast. That's about right. Okay, we can move on now. Now, the more stuff going on in baseball. Steven Strasburg. I'm very excited. This Polish guy podcast. We're in Northeast Ohio. So Mr. Strasburg is going to be facing the Cleveland Indians tomorrow. And it's going to be a good time. Very excited. Now, this kid is just amazing. I saw that whole start, and I'll tell you what. I don't care what really happens to this kid overall. I really hope he has a long career. I hope he never does get hurt. Here's the least that I want from him. I want a great 100 innings from him this year. He's on a max of 150, 160 innings for the year, and he's already thrown 55 in the minor. So he's going to get about 100 innings with the Major League Club this year, with a strict pitch count as well. The kid struck out 14 in just 94 pitchers. You're not supposed to have that sort of efficiency as a baseball pitcher. As a former pitcher myself, I can tell you that this kid is just filthy. Just sick. The home run of the Pirates hit was just because he got lucky to hit the right part of the bat, and that ball just caught a little bit of the middle of the plate. It was down in the middle of the plate, but it was a 91-mile-an-hour changeup that he got the bat head on and just took off into the jet stream. Excuse me. So this kid is incredible. That hook is unhittable. I don't know how you get proper contact without just getting lucky on his hook. So that leads to some thoughts. You know, the Nationals are becoming a respectable team. They had the number one pick in the draft. Well, how much does a baseball draft really mean to anything? Well, you know, I was actually on a chat with Rob Nyer from ESPN. I asked the question of, you know, is there any such thing as pitching prospects? I asked what, you know, the philosophy was. He said, well, of course there's pitching prospects, but if you're betting on them, you're going to lose. Well, of course. I mean, that's the true answer. You really shouldn't bet on anything when it comes to the baseball player draft. You can't bet on just young arms. It's such a crapshoot. But I'll tell you what, if your first round pick pans out, if you're lucky, boy, you're almost always going to have a great player on your hands. You don't need to see any further than baseball's leaderboards as of this week in the majors categories. You know, using WHIP in baseball, I mean, using WHIP in the pitching categories, you see that most of the top pitchers in baseball in WHIP, most of them were very high round picks. Cliff Lee was a fourth rounder. Bartolo Jimenez was a free agent on Dominican Republic, signed 2001. And then we get into real draft guys. Adam Wainwright, first round 2000. Doug Fister, seventh round 2006. He's a total shock. No one saw this coming from Fister. Matt Cain, first round 2002. Brett Cecil, first round 2007. Roy Halladay, first round 1995. Phil Hughes, first round 2004. Matt Latos, 11th round 2006. Lester, second round 2002. Johan was a free agent of Venezuela in 95. Chris Carpenter, first round 1993. Sean Markham, third round 2003. Most of those guys in the top of the draft. These are all the leaders in WHIP right now, and with throwing in a couple of big names with Lester, Johan, Carpenter. All your leaders and WHIPs, you know, you're going to have, you know, 6 out of 10 are first rounders. And, you know, depending on how you want to argue the free agents, you know, international free agents are, you know, are those first rounders? I don't know. But with pitchers, if they work out for you, if your first round pitcher works out for you, you're probably going to have a league leader of some sort. So that means the scouting is actually less of a crapshoot than you would think. That means the scouts are getting it right a lot of the time. Just you cannot predict injuries. You cannot predict a kid's psyche going through the minors. You just can't predict any of those things. But what you can say is you do your scouting. You identify the best players. If your first round guy doesn't get hurt, he's got to eventually be a league in the top 10 in the league in something. What that means, I don't really know. But it is interesting to find out that the guys who lead the league are usually high picks. That's why Albert Pujols is so interesting. He was a 13th rounder in 1999. If you want to go to the hitter side, a little less of a percentage of first round guys there. Morneau was third round. I'm using On Base Plus Slugging here. Top 10 OPS. Morneau was third round 1999. Miggy Cabrera, he's a free agent of Venezuela in 1999. Andre Ethier, second round 2003. Kevin Youkilis, eighth round 2001. Robinson Cano was a free agent of Dominican Republic in 2001. Pujols, 13th round 1999, as we said. Ryan Zimmerman, first round 2005. Miguel Batista, 20th round 2000. The guy's having an incredible year. He's never hit like this in his entire life. He's on his fifth team. We'll see if that really holds. Paul Konerko, first round 1994. Colby Rasmus, first round 2005. Then just other names. David Wright was first round 2001. Longoria was first round 2006. Scotty Rowland, guy having a great bounce back year. What was he? Second round 1993. And, of course, a 1-1. Adrian Gonzalez was first round first pick in the year 2000. So, interesting stuff with baseball going on right now, and, you know, it's just going to be a good ride. We're coming to the dog days, we're nearing the All-Star break, and it's just incredible to watch Ubaldo Jimenez, and I'll give you some first-hand accounts next podcast on exactly what it sounds like to watch Steven Strasburg pitch, unless the game gets rained out or something, but we'll see him. Now, back to basketball. We've done a little college football, we've done baseball, let's go to basketball. A couple of things that are interesting happening. Of course, the NBA Finals is tied at 2. What's going on there? You know, you got to think that with the home court advantage back, with winning the first game in Boston, that you've got to give the Lakers the edge. Having Bynum hurt is an interesting cog, because when he was in there, he dominated parts of games. He dominated parts of game two, game three. A lot of blocks involved. You know, these are... I'm sorry, it was game one and game three. The two wins that the Lakers have so far, Bynum played pretty darn well. But you still just got to think that even if the Celtics win on Sunday, they got to win one more in L.A., and L.A. is something like 28-5 in their last 33 home games, including the loss in Game 2 to the Celtics. So you just, I think you got to give the edge to the Lakers. And I don't like it. It sucks. I'm not a Kobe fan. Really bothers me, actually. But what are you going to do? It's going to be fun three games to figure this out. And I'll be watching that tomorrow night after get back from watching Mr. Strasburg. The other thing going on, and I need to give a warning out. I haven't seen anything yet this morning. I don't know if Tom Izzo has actually accepted the job from the Cavs. I know he's still pondering it. Unlikely that there's going to be an announcement on a Saturday morning. But let me give Tom Izzo a little bit of a warning before he joins the Cleveland Cavaliers. And let me give Dan Gilbert a little bit of a warning before Tom Izzo joins the Cleveland Cavaliers. Big time college head coaches that had relative good success in the college basketball landscape have done terribly when they have jumped in the NBA. How about the fact that there's not a single one with a winning record? Let's just go down the list here, and maybe Tom Izzo might want to rethink that, because he's got a pretty good thing going on in Michigan State. You know, those Final Fours that he's getting to pretty much every other year, might want to stick with that, because you might find yourself a 17-win, 65-loss NBA team. You know, it'd be nice to get that $4 million with 1 year, but you'll never, never be able to repair the ties that you sever by jumping ship like this. Now, let's go to the first and easiest one, Rick Pitino. How did he do? Well, pretty famous case. He was actually decently close to 500 when you hear some of these other ones. 192 and 220 with the Knicks and Celtics. Now, another big name that had some relative success in college basketball is Tim Floyd. And also helped destroy USC's program, of course. 280 winning percentage with Chicago and New Orleans. John Calipari. His name's been brought up. Another college coach that thought that he should get another chance. Well, John Calipari was 72-112 with the Nets. Lon Kruger. Might have forgotten about Lon Kruger. Well, he was 69-122 with Atlanta. Mike Montgomery. How do you do? He's 68-96 with Golden State. All right, another big name, Jerry Tarkanian. Didn't last long. 9-11. Best winning percentage out of this whole group. In 92-93 with San Antonio. Lasted only 20 games, 9-11. So the Tark towel didn't last very long, but yet he's going to be the most distinguished out of this group. And finally, I don't know how much you want to argue how much success he really had on the college landscape, but you have Paul Westhead. Now you got to say, Polish guy, wait a minute. Paul Westhead won two NBA championships. Yes, he did. Early 80s Lakers teams weren't hard to win championships with. Let me tell you why. Won two championships with the Lakers in 3 years. And after he left the Lakers, Westhead's career record was 79-178. That's right. 99 games below 500. Not very good. Not a single winning record out of that entire group. Tom Izzo, you probably want to stay at Michigan State, buddy. You know, I think my mama once told me, do what you're good at. Well, if you're good at coaching college kids and college basketball and that landscape and dealing with all their crap, takes a certain personality to do that. Doesn't really equate to the NBA very often, it seems. In fact, not often at all. Not a single 500 record. Just incredibly bad stuff. Now, maybe you're the guy that changes that perception. I doubt it, Tom. I doubt it. I sincerely doubt it. And you're not going to be able to repair those ties. So, you probably want to stay away, Dan Gilbert. Stop talking about it. Pull it off the table. Tell Tom he's got a good thing going there. You know, Tom, you're not getting that much of a raise. You considering what you can make in the long run. This short term, this is bad financial planning, Tom. Would you rather make $2 million a year for the next 20 or mark 5 for 1? And then scrounge up for some scraps like Isaiah Thomas. What was FIU basketball? Really? Don't do it, Tom. Don't do it to yourself. Don't do it to your family. Stay at Michigan State, buddy. You're going to be much better off. Now, finally, just wanted to talk about Model American of the Week. And now, this is pretty easy. Very easy to talk about. Sanctions came down against USC. Many of the wins for Reggie Bush in the national championship year were vacated. And Pete Carroll decided that he wanted to make a statement. And he mentioned that he felt that the sanctions didn't match what actually happened. And he said that the findings that the NCAA had did not match the facts. So in other words, he's implying there that the NCAA somehow made things up. And sure, it's pretty obvious that USC has been made an example of a little bit, as a little bit of a warning. But you know, with the Tim Floyd fiasco and the fact that it took 4 years to figure this out about Reggie Bush, when it's pretty obvious that this occurred. Pete, shut up. You jump ship at the right time. Keep your mouth shut. Don't call them liars. It's your fault this happened. Shut up. Don't let smart people start thinking and thinking that the people that really should be hurt are the people that were responsible, like you and Mike Garrett at the time. Don't let smart people start thinking that maybe we should sanction them. You know what's a good way to make sure that doesn't happen? And that the status quo continues? Shut up! What are you doing? Don't call them liars! You were there! It's your fault! You lost institutional control here. Aren't you lucky that they didn't just say that? And make it even worse? You hurt your program for 2 years. You should give Lane Kiffin money, which is one of the saddest things I've ever said in my life, because Lane Kiffin is a total nutbag. But he deserves money from you. You've destroyed his program for 2 years. People are going to jump ship. You know what you shouldn't do in that situation? You shouldn't put your name in the media. So congratulations, Pete Carroll. Congratulations. You were always a little bit of a prima donna. But, you know, now you're gone, and they jump ship at the right time? Isn't that just, you know, you want to start talking about how fishy that is again? I don't know, Pete. Maybe you should just shut up. Pay attention to the Seahawks. You got away with it. You're making more money now. You left at the right time. Shut up! So, Pete Carroll, congratulations. You're Model American of the Week. Folks, I'll talk to you soon. Appreciate you listening again. And Pete Carroll, shut up!